All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. So first, go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Kojak Podcast. I never add that in on my streams with my buddy Oddman. Oddman, as always, I'm honored and welcome to be on the show, dude. How are you doing?
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on as always, and always glad to be back with you.
You're too kind, dude. And if anybody listen how great Oddman sounds. He's got a new mic, a new soundboard. He's like Dan Bongino now.
That's funny. I watched a clip of him because I was looking for something else, and I was like, it was a video though, and he sounded like shit. And I'm like, dude, you're like, you got to be like up there in the top five paid guys now. You better get a better setup,
dude. I follow him on Instagram and I watch some of his clips, but I imagine his audience must be huge. It's probably like as big as Ben Shapiro's.
Gotta be, because he took that Rush Limbaugh slot, and that had to be like, I would imagine that was the biggest audience out there for talk radio at the time anyway.
And he does. I mean, this is perfect because I came up with our quick topics, but that I saw him do a show or whatever talking about Disney's, and I'll share the screen. So for everyone knows that Disney is pushing ramping it up into 10th gear with the propaganda. And so I'll pull up the article, but tell me, you know, what your feelings are, what's going on in the world of this propaganda machine that is Disney and everyone.
Well, I kind of had to get familiar with it. I saw the headlines, you know, some tweets and stuff about it, but I wasn't sure. So I watched some videos and I was like, oh, damn, they really are just coming straight out and saying this is what we're doing. And I think it just goes to show. I mean, Disney's always been weird as hell. I saw a video. Mike Huckabee was like, what happened to the wholesome Disney? And I'm like, I don't really think they've ever been wholesome. They've always had all this hidden messaging in there and different things like that. Even as a kid, I felt this dark, dark kind of feeling when I would watch Disney movies. But, you know, it's been done to death. But people know there's all this weird, sorrowful stuff in Disney, and like a lot of, orphans and different things like that, motherless children and stuff. But anyway, I feel like they see it as the time to go for this. They think that they'll probably be able to succeed, and they probably will, because dumbass Christians and people who should be standing against it, and I'm including myself in that, will not boycott the movies, will not stop going to Disneyland and Disney World. You know, people don't stand for anything. They get mad for a little while and then they forget about it and they end up supporting their own enemies. So I think they'll push this shit as far as they can, man. I mean,
you're a parent. So that's like try to imagine what I would do. That must be even more, cause I'm not a parent yet. That's like a whole new level of, you have a young, I mean, you're, you know what, I forget, you know, 10 or whatever, but that's concerning. That would be concerning to me for you.
Yeah. Cause I've got a 12-year-old now, a 12-year-old son, and my daughters are both grown. So that's how old I am. But they caught the tail end of all this craziness. And they just kind of laughed at it, especially my older daughter. She's 23. She just like, Dad, this, you're not going to believe what I saw at school today. You know, we would have a good time making fun of it. My middle daughter, she's a little more sympathetic. She's 19, but she did grow up in my home. And so she does make fun of things. My son, I was really worried because he was right there in the middle, and it's hard to raise a son nowadays in this whole, you know, we're inundated with all this demasculization or whatever you want to call it. I don't think I said that word right. Masculinization, whatever. But I'm getting fired up. But anyway, it's tough, man, because it's like anything that's seen in the least bit masculine is under assault. And so I didn't know where it was going to go and how things were going to go. But he and his friends seem to be maybe there's a little hope because they make fun of people constantly. They make fun of this stuff, this woke generation. They think it's hilarious. It's really refreshing to me, man. They make fun of people who are uptight about race and sex and everything the way it should be, because when people are so uptight and can't joke around about anything, you know, it just causes real animosity. It causes, you know, when you tell somebody you can't express yourself or you can't be funny or make fun of certain things, then it's going to pop up in negative ways.
Yeah, no, dude. And the thing that it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you block your kids from like watching Disney, they're going to be like that odd, you know, church. Like how church kids are kind of odd. That's how I worry they'll happen. But then the alternative is it'll brainwash. So it's just such a challenging spot for people. Like, what do you do as a parent with a kid? You don't let them watch Disney. Well, all their friends are going to watch Disney. They're going to probably watch it around you. Then it's just an impossible juggle that you know, it's hard to balance what the right answer is.
It is, man. And it's like, it's hard to know what to do. And, you know, I've let my son watch a lot of different things, but you know, there are some things, of course, I won't let him watch. And I've just tried to talk to him about what's going on, you know, and try to explain to him things like, you know, because basically it's like with the TV and like entertainment, they want to make us believe that everybody, you know, like that 90% of people are gay or, you know, transgender or whatever. Right. And it's just not like that whatsoever. In fact, it's much less than even the statistics, because they've got people confused, because they know, you know, that people don't really know who they really are, especially if you're younger, and they put this stuff out and make them think that this is the norm, you know, and people will start believing it, you know. And I think that some people come out of it, but yeah, you know, it's crazy.
It's crazy. You know, I don't know if it's like synchronistic or if I'm looking for these connections, but so I think I told you I'm reading this book on feminism. And I have my notes, but anyway, so regardless, what I found out was like these people for the feminist movement, like these, they're like the top three gals was a Betty Friedan Goldstein, Gloria Steinem, and another person. But all these people did, like, it was the exact same tactics that is going on with like the woke propaganda and the LG propaganda. Like they, like the one girl, she wrote in a huge magazine, which was like MS Magazine or something. And then another one was like, she did movies. It was like Sex in the City and a Girl, and not like to be confused with that TV show. But these people, they showed these women that were how unfulfilling it was to be a mom, that it's much more fulfilling if you have promiscuous sex, you use your sexuality as a, like a weapon. And that's the ultimate goal, is to have all of this sex. And you can see where that landed us in 30 years. Like they, and it was all funded by Rockefeller and the CIA. Like, I think he gave like $52 million or something to this one, like, group that was pushing this like feminist movement. And it's a it's like almost the exact same thing, right? Like they say, oh, like these people are being hurt, they're not living their full potential. And so they do make good points, like feminist, you know, like, no, they should not be required to be a housewife, obviously. But what they do is then that's how they get you opened. And then they just take it. And we can see where this movement has brought us today, where many women are unmarried, childless, and it serves like the purpose of multiple goals, you know, depopulation, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what I see is what's going on with this whole movement. It was like started with, these two people should be able to marry. They just want to live their life. Yeah. Okay. You know, who am I to stand if that is what makes you happy? But then that's like that first foot in the door, and then the door gets flung wide open. And I hate to say slippery slope, but it's a slippery slope.
slippery knob.
Yes.
Shaft. It is, man, because, I do feel that it's not any of my business what two consenting adults do, but then, you know, everything's always taken too far to extremes. So, you know, it's one thing becomes as bad as the thing it's fighting. You know what I mean? It's like right. Everything when there's groups involved, the individual seems to be able to a lot of times maintain a you know, common sense and remain able to critically think about issues a lot of times, where the crowd just it's a beast, you know. And and I think that that's our problem, is like, you know, with you know, the feminization of everything, it went way too far. Yeah, at one point, women were being abused and things weren't right. And it was a bad situation a lot of times, right. Not always, but now it's went completely the other way to where men can't even be men. And deep down, most women want men to be a real man. Right. And when you talk to them, when they talk to their girlfriends, I don't know, maybe like the younger generations may be feeling a little bit differently because they've had a lot more indoctrination into this, but I still believe that women down deep want a man, a real man that will, you know, that will protect them, help them in situations and be a partner to them. That's strong. Right. You know, it's right. Just part of us. It's part of the way we,
well, for, you know, thousands of years, this is like embedded in our genetic code. And that was also what this book was saying was, so you start with like innocuous beliefs that you can easily get behind. And then what they did with like the feminist movement and the communist movement, you slowly start pulling people away from their family, kind of like a Scientology cult. They pull you slowly away. So now because your family's the patriarchy, or your family's homophobic, or whatever it is, your family's loves big business. And then you pull them away. So now they're in the group. They've got no connections outside the group. So now they can take it further, because what are you going to, if you want to leave, you are going to be, your friends will shun you. They will verbally accost you at minimum, right? Like all these, and that's what I think a lot of this movement is, the LG whatever is these people, they're lost. They find a group. They just, you swoop you up. Now, if you maybe change your mind, you continue to learn more. You said, you know what? Maybe I was just confused. You can't, if you want to leave, you're gone, dude. You just burned every bridge because you yelled at everybody because they told you to. I mean, it's insane. It's like an awesome cult practice. If you want to grow a group, this is how you run it, dude. Get some propaganda. Make sure they don't have any friends and family outside the group. You'll be unstoppable, because that's what's happening now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy because I'm forgetting the guy's name, but that a couple of episodes I did on Jim Jones, his mentor was this other guy, this other reverend. And he told him early on, he said, if you really want to get a gathering, he said, pick an enemy and then stick with it. Ooh. And because you have an enemy, people will start to follow you and go against that enemy, because everybody wants to fight against something. And I was like, dude. Wow, that's profound.
That is amazing, dude. Yes.
Yeah.
That is, you're absolute. And that's, we've seen that again from, you have to pick a side, and you're right. That route, because like and I think like, I sometimes will like meander over to left wing Twitter if they've got a bunch of flags in their profile, and they truly do believe that there is like an attack on the way they want to live or stuff, when, and on our side, that's completely ridiculous. And I don't know if I think I'm being reality, but maybe I'm not, but it seems that all the cards are on their side and everything's against us. But it's such like either with them or you're against them, and they will take you down. It's like terrifying, to be honest.
It's almost like, you know, this is the way I feel about it now anyways. Like, most people don't care what you do. And if you're straight or gay or whatever, as long as you're minding your own business and not bothering them, most people just want to be left alone, you know?
Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, some person who looks really outrageous with 20 colors of hair dressed in rainbow walking down the street, stop looking at me. And like, people are like, we're not looking at you. We're minding, stop looking at me. Why are you tearing me down? We're not even speaking to you. It's like, they want that attention. And if they, if people aren't messing with them, then they're going to try and make people mad to get that attention. Does that make sense? And also, you know, people from these groups, they may even tell some of these people to start to agitate, because that's a big thing in the left-wing movements, is agitation. And I don't know exactly where I was going with that, but it just kind of reminds me that a lot of these problems will never be solved, because the people who really complain about them don't really want them to be solved. They want either, it's an outlet for them to make money, get attention, you know, get followers, get fame, get some sort of power, all of the above. And so that's the sad part about it, is I don't think most people who are really in these movements really want things to get better, at least the people at the top.
Right. Well, and that was the point that this book, that it's called Feminism Hoax, So if anybody wants to check it out, it's a really easy read. But they, like, they, with the Cold War, he brought up, he, you know, references Sutton in the book a lot. You know how much we love Sutton. And but he talks about how, you know, these communist movements in America before the Cold War started, they were funded, as you know, by, like, these, you know, the Rockefeller family, all these families. And they really wanted it. They thought that they could get this going. And there was a guy that was in this, like, Communist Party of America, or I think it might have been a girl. And she, after 50 years, she said that they told her to slow down because it wasn't going to be accepted. And then we went to have the Cold War. They realized they could make a boatload more money if they pushed, like, oh, communists are coming to take over, even though they were already here and running of many of these organizations. But the public wasn't at that point where they thought it was a home run. So they said, all right, let's go to war with them for 50 years, make buco bucks, and we'll try this again. And now, which is essentially what's going on. But I just found that really interesting. Like, they picked their, they know how to, it's so stupid because we always say, oh, they're dividing us, but they are really dividing us. And they know it's a way to make money and to create more tyranny and to just instill their will and beat you down and make you feel lost and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, they divide us, they subdivide us, they make up new things that they can divide us over. They make up new things they can make people confused over. Yeah. And I don't know where these people think this is all going to end, because it, you know, if you continue to weaken a society and pit people against one another, it's not going to end well. You know, no. You need to, and a lot of these people talk about tolerance and bringing people together, but they act just the opposite. And it's, I mean,
that's so true, dude.
There's only one way to go when they keep this happening is violence. It's always going to lead to violence, and that's not good for anyone. So it's right. It's really pitiful that the way that these people operate.
Well, you know who's going to save us, though? Elon Musk becoming the largest owner of Twitter. Free speech is back, baby. Get ready. He's bringing Donald Trump back. He's bringing Alex Jones back. So what's your, I know we talked a little bit about Elon, but what's, you see, you watched a few of the conservative ink clips or no?
I haven't. No, I've just saw the a couple of headlines and that's it.
I mean, just like PragerU and stuff like that, the normal divisive groups, they're acting like Elon is literally going to change Twitter, is going to change the world for the better place. You know, he's a conservative guy, I guess. I don't even know if that's true. But it's so quickly, we always talk about this, just jumping on whoever is showing any semblance of a similar idea as your group. And if they're a billionaire, that's who we attach onto. Like, we never will learn, or people will never learn. But I just wanted your take on it.
He's an interesting case because he's so extreme. Got to be one of the most popular people in the world, and such a influence among conservatives and liberals. You know, I mean, like, just a few years ago, it was the liberals that really liked Elon, and now it's the conservatives. And I think the tech thing, you know, kind of is you know, it doesn't know any one party. A lot of people love the technology of Tesla. They think it's fascinating and stuff, and I don't blame them. That's pretty cool. But I don't know, man. I feel like he's one of those people who's kind of, I don't know if he's connected to the deep state somehow or what, but he's such an influencer that anything he says, people either just freak out and hate it or absolutely love it. And I think that's kind of dangerous because we're so susceptible to the cult of personality. And I don't know. I was thinking about today, like, at this time, if he does reinstate Trump and even Alex Jones, but especially Trump, you know, right at this, it seems like a pivotal time right now with Biden being half, I mean, he's obviously not even all there, but you've got this Ukraine Russia thing going on. It's like full chaos, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
And it would just make, it would almost be perfect if you brought Trump back in to even double the chaos.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me would even signify that he really is some kind of a deep state actor, and he's trying to bring even more conflict, because that's what they all thrive on. is, right. You know, the crazier the times are, the more they can get done behind the scenes.
Dude, it's just so funny. Like it's such a well-oiled machine. Like the moment it's just, I don't know. It's almost upsetting that we still ever like a large percentage of the population actually believes when Fox is bumping somebody up and putting them on a pedestal, or Dan Bongino is like, oh, they're terrified. He's going to do all these things. People, it's just, we never like learn, like there, you cannot put your faith in these people. They don't care about you. Like they literally hate you. Elon wants to put a chip in our brain and talks about AI and how we can fight it. But yet he wants to put a chip in your brain. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So why do people easily forget their past? Kind of like Trump, right? He said, like how you always said that quote about the guns, like you take the guns first, you ask, whatever his quote is, that with the AR-15s. But we like push these aside. We justify them and say, well, maybe he meant this. But no, they didn't. They weren't being ambiguous. They were literally telling you that they disagree with you on many things.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, and people love Trump so much, you know, that they, I think, took a lot of that emotion and kind of put it towards people like Elon Musk and anybody else that in the spotlight, even Putin. You know, it's like I see people that seem to think he's the new savior, and it's like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know,
yeah, right.
Stop looking to these people like they're some kind of gods and they're going to save you, because they're not God. And, you know, we've been through this a million times, and stop falling for the same old tricks time and time again. You know, it keeps them from really, almost feel like they put these guys out. They're almost like characters from movies, or, you know, even some of the top politicians. It's like, are they just there to confuse us and to make certain people love them and certain people hate them and just keep the people fighting over it? Because it sure seems that way to me.
Yeah, dude. Everyone wants to get like their Twitter, like mic drop, like Ted Cruz. I swear, like that, the Supreme Court hearing or whatever it's called, everyone's just hoping to get a clip of 15 seconds to own the other side. And it's like, oh, yeah. Dude, you don't do anything anyway. I watched Ted Cruz on, like, just a clip of him on a Levin show. I forget what his first name is. But all he pushes his book, like, they just don't do anything. You know, he says, well, I actually talked about all of this in my book. It's on Amazon's bestseller list, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, like, dude, that alone just disgusted the hell out of me. Like, you're talking about supposedly our future. The book's title is How One Seat in the Supreme Court Can Change America, a really like grim topic. And you go to push your book on this top, like, you have no self-respect. If you actually cared, the last thing you would do when you're trying to address the public is try and hawk your book to more people. Like, that's disgusting, dude.
I swear, I think that's why, was that Ted Cruz's book or Mark?
Yeah, Ted Cruz's book. Yeah. Well, I think it's called One Seat.
Ah, okay. I swear these guys, the conservatives are just the worst about the books too. I guess because their books are better sellers, but you know, it's like the pundits and the representatives, they've got to write a book, And if it's successful, they're writing a book every other year. And it's really disgusting. It really is. Because it's full of nonsense. It's full of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it might have a few good ideas in there and good points, but they don't get to anything really deep. So
no. And someone brought up, and I remember seeing this somewhere else, how Wernher von Braun's book mentioned a man named Elon that, like, I think colonized Mars. And so I just say this because it is like, sent me that awesome video, and I'll try and post it for everyone that's listening. It was like 10 minutes long about Elon Musk's backstory. And that was fascinating, dude, how his whole shtick is a lie. He says he comes to America penniless and he pulls himself up by his bootstraps and his dad was a heart. He doesn't even talk to his dad and all these things. And dude, he's literally bought his way into that first. I think that's what I remember. You like bought his way into essentially what became PayPal and just rolled off of that. But he had very little. He wasn't this genius behind it all. He just bought his way in to sign. He was like John Hancock, put his name largest on the document, and that's it.
Yeah, he seems to me like he's kind of a good con man, you know. Right. His hair's not even real. So, like, come on, people.
There you go. Never trust a man that does that.
Right, exactly. You don't trust a man that does that or wears a visor all the time, because that's half a hat and that just doesn't make sense.
That's a dad joke, dude.
Right. A wise man told me that a long time ago. And everybody I've met that wears a visor a lot are con men, or there's something shady about them. I'm telling you.
Oh, dude. Well, I this is kind of like a similar, I'm kind of like jumping back to the woke Disney thing a little bit. But so I told you, and if everyone didn't see this, Palm Springs City Council is going to pay 20 transgender residents up to $900 a month for 2 years as a basic income test, UBI test, even though it's, you know, they don't even care about how much you make. It's a pure test. So two things. Do you see this growing into a UBI being instituted in America? And do you see it being as another way to, like, they're going to say equality or equity, whatever is the phrase, equality, I guess, and how this is going to grow into a, if you're a minority in one way or another, you'll get it. Otherwise you won't.
You know, it could very well lead to that, especially this is California, right?
Yeah. California.
Yeah. So, you know, there'll be the test case for it. Of course, it'll start there, then lead everywhere else, you know? But I don't know if they'll get away with it. It seems to me like that's, you could really come up with a lawsuit. That would be sexist or at least discriminatory to help this one minority group and then not help all the others. You know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, I don't know what they're planning or what they hope with that, but I saw one representative, local representative, I think that's her right there, the blonde lady. And she said something like, you know, they've probably spent more money on the committee trying to work this out than, you know, what it's even worth in the long run. And that's kind of the way it seems like with a lot of these, like with the federal government, you know, a lot of times one of their programs that their long held programs that they've come up with at some point, supposedly to help poor people, it doesn't work anymore. So they usually don't even end it, though. Instead, they start another committee, and it's just like more and more money pours into these worthless committees. And I think it's more about making the committees and getting the money than even helping people. So that could be something they're hoping to start up.
Yeah. Well, it's, and I always do this where when I'm reading a book, keep referencing it, but the feminism book, it talks about how Marxism and communism wants to break down the family. And this book was written in like 1990. And so it's funny how this is 30 years ago in this book, and every woke agenda is the goal, dude, is to remove the family. So now, like, my dad was a social worker in Philadelphia in the 70s. And he told me this story. I think it was early 70s. So most people were married then, not because I think the Great Society just started, you know, around there. And so he talked about how the mom would get money as long as the dad wasn't in the house. So this one lady had like seven kids with no father in the house. And she was getting these huge checks even for those days. And it's hard to not believe that they are systematically trying to destroy our family units, just like with this, giving money to, you know, the letter people, because that way it's going to encourage you to stay within this group. It's going to encourage you to, you know, it's very expensive to buy a child. It's a great way if you're trying to depopulate the earth and to break everyone down to make sure the state is their family. I just can't see how anyone could deny that's what every woke agenda has led to.
Yeah. And like some of those, the information that I researched on the Fabian Society, they were huge into education and people connected to them. That was one of their main goals, was kind of separate the kids from the parents. They thought, of course, that they could end any kind of injustice by the state taking over the children from an early age. And a lot of those early progressives, you know, wrote plainly about that kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, there's definitely, that's not a conspiracy. I mean, I don't think that every educator by any means believes that, no. But if the roots of the education system believes that, then it's a real problem. And what you were saying there about if the parents or if a couple, if the lady wanted to get money from the state or the local place, the man couldn't be in the house. Now, I remember when I first started getting into like alt media and stuff like that, I watched this documentary called, I think it's the Pruitt Ego Myth, and that's a Pruitt Ego as in I-G-O-E myth. Yeah. So that is a good documentary. I think everyone should watch it. It's not a political documentary. It's just like about these people's lives that lived in this housing. It was like one of the first public housing developments. Yeah. And these people who are adults at this point are talking about how they remember the police coming to get their dads or their uncles or whatever and making them leave because they had the no man in the house rule. It was like no able-bodied man in the house. And certain places in the country had that. And that absolutely destroyed the Black family. Right. And they talk about that, their experiences in that documentary. And it was wild. It made me want to look into it. And they've tried to rewrite history on that, so it's harder to find information about it, but it definitely happened.
Right. Well, dude, I mean, it's just like I just talked about LBJ's Great Society. Like every time there's this massive overhaul of, you know, being progressive and say they use that innocuous, like, oh, people need a safety net and we need to be able to help them. And they know that that's just the beginning. I mean, I posted a meme the other day, like how the welfare state began. It was most like everybody carrying a downtrodden family. And now the welfare that they were pulling is like having a party and they're saying, you know, give us we all deserve a fair share as they're like whipping the people that are pulling them. But they had to know, like, if you give people are always people. If you give them just enough to get by, they're not. Are they going to try and pull? Very few will try and pull themselves out of that situation because they're comfortable. They have food, they have shelter, they have et cetera, et cetera. It's just amazing how these plans that like the New Deal and the Great Society, they all started with, like I said, these innocuous things like, yeah, people deserve health insurance, and they end totally different than what they began.
Yeah, they had these grandiose ideas of how they're going to help people. And, you know, I can't blame them for that. But, you know, kind of a common sense kind of got thrown out of the whole thing. And when like when I was saying a few minutes ago, these certain agencies and departments, when they don't work, normally they don't even get rid of them. So they couldn't face up to the fact that these housing units that they had developed weren't really working. And they were ridden with crime. And you think about, it's just a fact, almost every big city you go to, the worst parts of that city are the government housing areas. And so that is a huge failure. And, you know, and they don't even want to address that. They don't want to address the crime, the inner minority crime that happens a lot of times in those places. And it's been a failure. They won't ever fix it because they don't want to fix it.
No. Yeah. And that and everyone listening knows this, but there is no incentive. They don't care. So there is no incentive for them to get it better. The private prison industry thrives, the court systems and fines thrive. I mean, dude, like everyone here knows I've been arrested, and luckily, you know, my parents were middle class and they were able to help me, but for like all my, I still owe, like I owed them like $13,000 to the state. So now my crimes are relatively minimal compared to somebody who maybe gets like an armed robbery. They'll get this huge fine. They'll never pay it back. So they will always, and they can get picked up for not failing to pay it. Like, it's just these systems are created to, and I now I'm kind of sounding like a, a, a BLM person, but the point is it's meant to hold us down. It's meant to keep you. So you need the government, you need them. And if you need them, you won't step out of line and say, wow, this is broken. This is beyond broken, right?
Right, exactly. And it keeps people, it's like we're kind of conditioned to defend one side of the bureaucracy or half the bureaucracy at all times, you know, and really it's the whole thing together that really is, it doesn't work for the people. It works for the politicians and their cronies, you know, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm not saying we should just destroy all government, because then we would have the Gates and the Rockefeller armies coming after us and stuff like that. But like, you know, the people, it was up to the people to be eternally vigilant. And that's the only way it would have ever worked, you know, as hold the people accountable that were supposed to be our representatives. They don't even seem like representatives to me. They seem like they're almost like they think they're royalty, or they're, you know, they're like elite class of people who are above us, who they don't have to answer to, because they really don't. I mean, right. You think about it, look how, who the hell keeps voting Lindsey Graham in time after time after time, and other people too, Dianne Feinstein. Oh my God.
Dude. Yes. Yeah.
It's just crazy, man. It makes you wonder what the hell is wrong with people, but,
even Nancy Pelosi. Also.
Yeah. Oh my God. She's been there forever. And you know, it doesn't matter too. It's like one thing that's really frustrating is these people almost always become filthy rich. And of course, if you're on the left, they won't even acknowledge that their side is just as bad or worse. In fact, their side's becoming the richer side. You know, like Dianne Feinstein, for instance. I mean, her and her husband are absolutely filthy rich. And I was looking, and her husband is one of the biggest donors of one of these groups. I think it's the National Democratic Institution. And they are in bed with this group called the National Endowment for Democracy. And I'll be damned if they're just not part of the CIA. And so it's like, I don't know. It's crazy. I mean,
and speaking of the CIA, so like, we obviously know the CIA is the professional, there is the international banking police system and espionage and all those things. But it's, so I know I keep doing this, I'm referencing, but so those three names I mentioned that were huge in the feminist movement, both of them went to this college, Smith's College. And so I had to look up Smith's College because it's in Massachusetts, 2000 students, mostly all women. They allow, they're very progressive, very woke. Like, they encourage social activism. That's why both of these people who created the feminist movement came from Smith's College. Well, also it's like a CIA breeding ground. And beyond that, Barbara Bush went to this college. And I'm just bringing this up to say that, like, these elites, how we always talk about this. So Barbara Bush, you know, her husband was that was the CIA director. That was the first Bush.
Yeah.
President. Yeah. You know, her husband clearly was a conservative. He was skull and bone, all these things, just, you know, supposedly that right leaning guy. But yet his wife went to one of the most progressive colleges in the world. Like, it's just so disgusting that we fight for, or are these people, like, we vote them in again. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, because who else are you going to vote? Who are you vote for, the evil you know or the evil you don't know? I don't know. But it's just, I just found that really amusing that that she went to the same school as this totally progressive areas, but she marries the CIA director. I don't know. Just,
yeah, that is interesting. And Bush is like, at least H.W. Bush, he was, you know, he always like presented himself as a conservative. I read this book about him a while back, and he was like in the closet, he was a progressive, and like, he was always for all these different things. But like, if you go back to his dad was one of the first supporters and funders of Planned Parenthood.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, and then all these things, he was so about globalizing the nation and getting the United Nations, giving them power to police the world and all these different things like that. It's like, they just say they're conservative or even liberal sometimes, but they mostly, it seems like it's a conservative. Oh, I'm conservative and I'm a Christian, you know, and then you start digging into their past and you're like, how, you know, you're
right.
just saying this, you're saying one thing, but then you've lived your life doing a whole nother thing. And it's
I don't
crazy.
Know if it was HW or his father Prescott, because he ran for office as well, didn't he? But one of them, I think he did, but even regardless, one of them, they birth control, like just was being popularized because of these women that I talked about in movies and having free sex. That's how you're really happy when you just bang everything. But, and he said, and at the time it was like a heated debate. Should birth control be allowed? Right. We're a Christian. And isn't that crazy? This was only in like the '80s or, you know, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 50, 40 years ago. And, but he agreed, he said, oh no, birth control should be used. And he almost like lost whatever. I think that's when they moved to Texas. So it was like, I don't know, I could be messing this story way up, but I just found that wild one that 40 years ago, birth control was viewed as like demonic. And, now, you know, every woman is on it, but, just again, more of these hypocrisies that we just see. It seems like they're all really just hoping to be a communist socialist monopoly where they're at the top, but they hold their place, but everyone else loses theirs.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It seems that way for sure. It's like, yeah, I think they, and it's like nowadays, well, for the longest time, really, a politician can just say one thing. I mean, it's like they tell you one thing, but people should know just because they're politicians, don't listen to them because politicians lie. That's what they do. They lie. It's been known forever.
Right.
And instead, you know, we love to have them tell us what we want to hear, you know, oh, this one is for what I want. This one wants to lead me and they're going to push these things that I want to have pushed. And well, it's crazy.
Did you see AOC? Amazon was able to unionize, I guess, in New York at their one location. Did you see that?
No.
But regardless, it was out of her district, but it's in the city. And it was an African-American guy that ran the union and he gets interviewed. He's like, so happy, you know, that we did this. And the reporter asked him about AOC. And he said, she never helped us. This isn't her win. She doesn't deserve any name of it. And then someone questioned AOC on Twitter about that. Like, why didn't you go to their meetings? And you say you're all behind this unionizing Amazon. Why didn't you go help? And she said, oh, it was a security issue. And then someone pulled up her response from like that week when the meeting was happening. And she said it was a scheduling issue. So it's just funny. Like these people, you know, just caught red-handed. Well, anyone that's an AOC fan, listen to that. No, they won't care. But it's just amusing that someone that is the face of like progressive democracy, which is just socialism and or whatever they call it. I don't know what they call it, but, you know, the face of it. Couldn't even care enough to a huge moment for Amazon, for workers that are able to unionize in those horrible sweatshops. And she wasn't even there to give her support beyond tweeting about it.
It's, you know, I think I've talked about it before, but it's almost like, you know, they'll say a certain thing when they're stumping, you know, trying to get elected, and that they have all these cool slogans and they tell people what they want to hear, and then they get into office and, you know, most of the stuff never comes to fruition, but the people still have that idea, that fantasy of what they were saying when they were running as a candidate in their head. And it's almost like they build these people up as these like superheroes that are, you know, like larger than life almost. And I think that people let them off the hook all the time because of that. And they, and that's probably one reason that they continue to keep getting voted in too, because it's almost like people don't actually see what they really are. And then plus they're always like, well, you don't want the opposition to get voted in, do you? You know, so, no, hell no. You know, so
just like Ted Cruz's book, One Vote Away, you know, let's scare the shit out of you. So you make sure you keep voting for me, even though in your moment of need, I go to Cancun, Mexico. But so I wanted to bring up, I thought this was fun. Madison Cawthorn, did you see? I have it on the screen, but orgies and cocaine, par for the course in U.S. Capitol, according to U.S. youngest member of Congress. So, you know, what immediately I think of that is who you will know the guy's name better than he was the guy in the 80s that got caught running it. He is running the prostitution ring. And then he ended up, he was getting caught, and then he killed himself with writing like a note on the wall, like, I did my duty for this country. Everything I did was for this country. And do you remember who I'm talking about?
Yeah, Craig Spence, I believe was
Craig. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Can you tell everybody real quick about you? Because you remember the name. I'm butchering the story.
So, yeah, he was as big a part of the Franklin scandal as Larry. What was his name? King. Larry King. Yeah, Lawrence King. But he didn't get nearly as much attention. But in the Nick, again, I'm blanking Ryan. On the guy's name. There's Nick Ryan. Yeah, there's two books about the Franklin scandal. And he had the second one. And he talks a lot more about Craig Spence. But Craig was connected to the CIA. In fact, he would brag that he was part of the CIA, and he would have all these homo parties and have underage people there and prostitution and all that stuff. And he would have CIA goons running around, and he was like really flamboyant about it. And
right,
and he got to go to the White House after hours.
That's what it was.
Several times. And you know, I don't think anyone's ever proven exactly what he was doing there, but it's thought that he was smuggling in gay prostitutes into the White House for, I don't know, maybe George H.W. Bush or, you know, others. I would think, though, if it was actually, you'd almost have to be crazy to do it at the White House if you're a president. I would think you would find some other location or something. But God knows what they were, you know, what's went on inside that White House before.
Right. Well, I just found that funny that Madison Cawthorn said that. Did he actually witness that? I don't know. You know, he's probably just doing it because he knows that, because the conspiracy world is growing. When you agree, like, more and more people are open to this idea that these people at the top, they're so beyond disgusting that they'd say, okay, I could see that happening. Maybe not like the little human part of it, but the sex and the drugs. So I know, you know, who would invite this guy to a party? Come on, you're not going
right.
to, who's inviting him? I'm not going to invite him. But so that he saw that, I just found that funny that he's like, he's either his like PR person, whoever was smart enough to say, you should call this out. Your people on the right, you're going to love it. You're going to be in the headlines if you say it. But I just,
I can see how that could backfire on him though. You know, like going to be reelected. If you're giving away our secrets, but I don't know. It's crazy. Right. You're right. Because a lot of people are really into conspiracies, especially since the Q movement. And I think just with movies and conspiracies being more and more a part of our everyday lives in entertainment, I think more people are open to it.
Yeah. Well, dude, and that's another, like, you know, it's like almost full circle going back to Disney. But I just found that so amazing. I think I told us last episode with how the Jesuit colleges, they started this theater program in like the 1500s. And the quote that I keep using was like, they did a play for these Bavarian Protestants, the Dukes or whatever. And after the play, they made fun of Protestants the whole play. They went and did Ignatius Loyola's spiritual learnings, which include like lots of meditation, lots of prayer. Sometimes you'd whip yourself. And they said, wow, like this play was more beneficial than 100 sermons could be. And the movies is so like, cause, and especially now, I mean, back then people loved and searched for a book, and you were impressed if you had a large book collection. And now all we do is watch movies, but I don't know what my point was that TV is just, it is our medium for us to learn for most people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think I tweeted it a couple weeks ago, but I saw a quote by Nixon, who said that the American people don't believe anything until they see it on TV. And I think it's true, man. It's like, it's become such a part of everyday life that, and especially for people who are my age and even the two or three generations above me, I mean, man, I don't think they have a clue how influenced they've been by TV. Mm. I mean, it's just because they were indoctrinated into it their whole lives, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure when it's again, that gradualism where little by little, I mean, when they started watching TV, the generation older than you, you know, it was three channels. My dad, you know, they boomers, the three channels, you had to turn the knob to get the, and Superman and all these things like that. And it was, and at that time, relatively traditional values. You know, it wasn't any like real bad promiscuity or degeneracy or anything. And just slowly by slowly, so they can't, it's probably even harder for them to see that change, like how their values have changed just from watching TV, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it, you know, it's like, what is it? What do they say? What you import is what you export or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, like what you take in is it affects us. It definitely affects us. And we don't realize it, I think, a lot of times. I know it affects me. And a lot of the music I used to listen to affected me too. And I kind of stopped listening to a lot of that. So it definitely, people don't want to admit that. And I used to was in denial too. I was like, no, you know, art could never make you want to do something, but good Lord, man, it does. Especially if you're a teenager and music can really, really influence you.
Dude, I give this example, like I was, you know, a drug addict, all these things, because I listened to I wanted to be like this gangster rapper that I listened to. And I remember when I was like in therapy once, he was like, who's your hero? And I was like 18. And he was like, is Biggie Smalls or Notorious B.I.G. your hero? And I still remember that, you know, 10 years later, because it was like, wow, like this music was able to, I had a great upbringing, a middle class, but yet I want to be some, because that's what's cool. That's how you can be a man, or that's how you can earn respect or whatever it is. It's just so beyond power. And it goes back to, again, that Jesuit play, which they exported everywhere, you know, because it is so, people, I don't know if it's like our brain, but we almost enjoy or being told what to think and feel, which is crazy. There's comfort in it, right? There's safety. You're not like stepping on toes.
Are scared to death to actually think critically about issues, and they just want to have their feelings strengthened. Sorry, I've moved my mic and I got to get used to it, but they want to have their feelings strengthened, and they want to just be told what to think and what to feel and have a comfort in that. And it offends people. It actually offends people when you say things that would actually kind of make them think about an issue.
You're right, dude. If you are questioning their world they're living in, there's this cognitive dissonance has gotten, and that's just, again, another win for these huge companies. And that, I guess that's the only thing like that many people would probably struggle with believing, that there is a concerted effort to push a message out. And, you know, to regular people, because at work, I'll talk about it. And I'll explain, you know, seven companies own all of these companies. There is no independent. They got removed in, you know, Telecommunications Act of 90. Like, so it would be possible to conservatively, I don't know if I'm using that word right, trying to put out a message that's similar, you know, maybe it's a different story, but the morality that they're pushing or the idea they're pushing is to the same end.
Yeah, you know, we've all seen these compilation videos of these kind of collages of these local news people all using the same phrasing or same words. And I know when I mean, way back when I first started listening to talk radio, Rush Limbaugh would play those way back then. And I guess he would just, you know, like get somebody to collect them. So that's been going on forever. And yeah, you got to imagine that those, that information and those words and phrases go out to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. It may even go out overseas. It might be even international. Who knows? But if that's not mind control and brainwashing, right, I don't know what is.
No, that's a great, you're absolutely. And that could also be like another PSYOP within a PSYOP. You think mind control, you think like you're getting very sleepy. And for people listening, I'm shaking that little, pocket watch that they shake that spins it. But maybe that's the joke in itself, because you don't need all that. Like, you can brainwash people so easy. I still remember, and I use this example all the time, but during like Trump's thing, I was saying like back the blue. What other things were being pushed during then? Back the blue. I don't know. Whatever was being pushed then. And I was finding myself agreeing and like in my head saying, even though cops have never been a good experience for me, we need them or whatever. And we do need them. I'm not like a crazy person, but I'm just saying like, it is so powerful to you can sway people who, and I started with, you know, playing NWA, fuck the police, and it turned to back, you know, it's just amazing, dude. It's so amazing.
It is, man. It's so powerful. I mean, propaganda has been perfected to the point where it is, dude, we went and we watched the movie Morbius the other night.
Yeah. Oh, I heard it was horrible. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good, but
oh, that's good.
Yeah, but like I was a fan of that comic a long time ago, okay. So maybe I'm just like, but I can't stand Jared Leto though. I'll admit that. But you know, it's like I find myself every now and then, because I rarely even watch movies, kind of getting sucked in every now and then, and I'll be like, oh, wait a minute, I see what they're trying to do here, and they know exactly how to work your emotions with the music, with the lighting, with the way people are speaking, you know, with the actual words they're speaking. And it's just amazing what they've been able to come up with. And we're subjected to it all the time.
All day. Yeah. Well, and it's just like how you were saying, like the simp in those Jesuit plays and Shakespeare, who, you know, might have been a Rosicrucian, Francis Bacon, right? That's like one theory, or he wrote some of it. But even in these plays in the 16, 17, 1800s, they had all this hidden symbolism in the story, like all of Shakespeare, Macbeth and stuff. Like there's, you know, symbolism underneath symbolism. And again, they've just perfected that. Like, you know, we all know Isaac Weishaupt is an NY Patriot who will break down these symbols and meanings that are having unknown effects on your subconscious. But it's like they have, just like you said, perfected the ability to put you in a group, and now they can. And that was another, someone brought this up on Twitter. I saw, they said that the big push, which I didn't agree with, of like LGBTQ, it's not that it's like a demonic thing. They're trying to push it because it'll better create like a niche market that they can directly advertise to this group. And it's, he was giving me that it's pearly sales. And I don't believe that, but I think that is somewhat true, that the more like you can niche market people and get them into the group, you know exactly how they're going to respond. You know exactly what their viewing points are going to be because you've created them. And then you can sell them accordingly on, you know, this shirt has a rainbow flag that says F the poll, whatever. You know, that's a poor example, but
pee pee in the poo poo. Yeah. You're right, man. I mean, it's true. It's like, that's the thing with, capitalism, if you want to call it that, is like it knows it's good and bad. You know, there's no discrimination when it's open, you know, and people like are free to trade with one another. So, you know, nobody really cares if it's somebody from a different race, as long as they're getting their money, basically. But also the bad part is it will absolutely capitalize on anything, no matter how bad it is, right, for society to make money. And I'm sure if that's not the main goal, I'm sure that the people who are seeing this happen are jumping on it. Because, you know, the way they jumped on the whole COVID thing, all these corporations, it was so sickening. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm not a libertarian anymore, because this would have ended it for me if I hadn't already gotten out of that whole thing.
Well, it's another example, like company like Gulf and BP, or, you know, old Standard Oil companies, I see their ads for green energy and how they're leading the charge in green energy. And it's like, dude, you just had like a billion gallon oil spill probably like 5 years ago. What do you mean you're all like, you've done more damage to the planet than any one human could do? You know, like, but yeah. It's just so hypocritical and no one sees it.
You know, there's this lady, Corey Morningstar, on Twitter, and some people might be familiar with her. I think she's a very left-leaning person and even a feminist, but like, she's like from what I can tell, she's like a person with a lot of common sense who's actually old school feminist. And she actually exposes these companies who have grabbed onto the green agenda and pretend to be environmentally, wow, friendly and all this stuff. And it's a pretty cool follow, just because it's things that I would never think about and information I probably would never otherwise look into. But yeah, I remember hearing a few years ago that some of the oil companies actually ran some of these environmentalist groups and were even coming up with new legislation to regulate, to keep these newer oil companies from popping up. So it's,
well, I think Sutton talks about that, like with the new deal, everyone deserves a 2 weeks vacation, or we'll pay for your health bills if you get injured on the job. If you have more than 50 people, you need to pay Social Security. And Sutton brings to the point, it was all these big bankers like and Rockefellers that were pushing this legislation. Why? Because they wanted to limit competition. And like your Fabian socialists, you always talk about there. Like, I remember some of the quotes were like, competition is so old. Like, let's stop wasting resources and let's let Standard Oil sell all the oil. What? Come on. Why are we fighting over this? This is old behavior, you know?
Yeah. 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 It's crazy. We live in a world where it's almost like whatever we're told something is, it's just the opposite, you know,
right.
Not everything, but a lot of things, especially, you know, when business and big business and politicians and the government join together, it's like, you know, democracy for one, you know, when they say democracy, run, it's not democracy. It's just the opposite.
Oh, dude. Well, that was, we'll end it there for it. We had 15 people, up to 20 people watching Odd Man. So they love the Odd Man. One asked where they can find you. So this is a perfect time to tell everybody where they can find you and listen to. And also, I want to say, I gave you the OG nickname. I always called Odd Man the OG, and I saw NY Patriot called you the OG. So you are welcome for an awesome nickname.
Well, that's all. Thank you very much, my friend. I could be called a lot worse, and I have been. So thank you. So yeah, if anybody wants to follow the podcast, it is theoddmanout.podbean.com. And you can also find my podcast on alternatecurrentradio.com with a lot of other good podcasts on there. And if you want to follow me on social media, best places are Twitter and Instagram, and it's _theoddmanout.
Nice. And I'll put your handles and everything. So everyone, I'm going to be on tomorrow, same time with Bob's Lessons. So if you want to hang out again, I'd be honored to have you. So everyone, thanks for listening. This was a huge group, awesome group. So thanks for watching, guys. And we'll talk soon. Peace.